dbkmediaservices.com.
Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs and Bruce Knox.
Hello again there, SVC fans, and welcome once again to SVC Sports Talk. This is, in fact, show 154, brought to you, as always, by the Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe. I am Bruce Knox, and that gentleman sitting over there is the soothsayer of SVC Sports. This time we're talking SVC Spring Sports, SVC Sports Zone's own Shane Combs. Shane, how you doing?
Doing really well, Bruce. How about you this week?
Well, I'm a little cold, to tell you the truth. And I think probably all of our spring athletes are experiencing that same thing. And the biggest topic on everyone's mind, when we've encountered it on social media, we've seen it in emails, calls, texts, everything. It's the weather. And how has that been influencing our scheduling and even game outcomes?
Well, quite a bit. I tell you, when I first started putting the agenda together this week, it was coming in about four or five different directions. And you know, they're all coming in different, ways or different topics. But the one common thread seemed to be the weather. Yes. In some way, it was being impacted. And, you know, it just impacts everybody involved. What happens so many times is, you know, the administrators and the ADs are trying to figure out, okay, are we going to play tonight? Mm-hmm. Well, then a lot of times, you know, one thing we've gotten a lot better at in our league is we used to cancel baseball and softball games way, way too early. You know, we would cancel them 8, 9, 10 o'clock. And, you know, a lot of times we wouldn't give Mother Nature a chance or some of our fields a chance. And we have certainly I've been able to get better at that. But again, you, there's a lot of communication. You have to, you know, the umpires are waiting. The bus drivers are waiting. You're trying to figure out a lot of times if, you know, the coaches around our league are teachers. Mm-hmm. So depending on your teaching schedule, you know, I may not be able to get down to my field until lunchtime or so forth in terms of checking out the field. So I can't really say if my field's ready. Now, you know, some of your experienced coaches will start to get real familiar with your field. You'll get pretty good at it. You know, you'll know, well, it rained this much. We're going to need a few hours, or we can probably play by five or whatever. But, you know, then you get into some track. I know a lot of times some track people are a little quicker to cancel earlier in the year. Remember what I talked about, yeah, Bruce, last week on the show? Everyone, I kind of got some flack for my Uni Yoda comment. I didn't mean anything by it. I was just meaning that, you know, if you're not named Uni Yoda, you may not have people lined up at the coach's door to run track. So a lot of times you're trying to get some extra athletes out or whatnot. But no, it's it is. The weather impacts the practices. You get some cold practices because after a while you can only run track or play softball or play baseball indoors. You know, you got to get out. And so that's hard there. It's tough on some of the arms, especially on the baseball side. And, you know, we're going to talk a little pitch count later on and some of the pressure that puts on coaches and so forth. But, yeah, I mean, across the board, from fans to players to administrators, it's a scheduling, and it's a bear of a thing to handle, and it's just part of it.
Yeah, I don't know whether it means anything or not, but as we're recording this on Sunday the 10th of April, it looks like in the extended forecast you might actually have some decent weather coming up particularly towards the end of this week.
Yeah, I'm seeing the same thing. Probably some rain tomorrow night, and then Tuesday through early next week, even if they have a clue what they're talking about.
Yeah, well,
it does look good.
Friday night into Saturday around here was pretty crappy. I mean, there's just I couldn't believe we were experiencing what we were experiencing there. So if you don't like the weather, just wait a while. It'll change, I guess. Yes. So we'll have to wait. Well, fans, as I mentioned in the open, our show is brought to you, as it is each and every time, by the Triple Crown Family Fun Center. And that is located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe. And we want to thank them again for continuing to sponsor us. We appreciate all the sponsorship that they provide for us and have provided for all these many years. It is a great place for anybody, people of all ages, and you can go out there and book your next party or your group event, or you can go just to you and the family. If you have any questions, you can always give them a call at 740-773-PLAY. That's 740-773-7529, and they are located just off of Bridge Street behind the Hampton Inn. So, anything else we do differently to help with these situations, Shane, with the weather and so forth?
Probably not. You know, there might be a few things we touch on throughout the show, but really the spring sports in Ohio are really at the mercy of the school schedule. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember talking about this a couple years back, but, you know, a lot of the school schedule with the testing and so forth, the idea of the school year would probably get shorter before it gets longer. Shorter meaning we would start earlier in the fall. So I guess shorter is the wrong word, but your spring would get shorter. A lot of times what happens here in the Ross County area, because of the fair situation, that's been really fought by a lot of your teacher unions and so forth and some of the scheduling. But yeah, I mean, there's really not a lot, because it's more of a statewide thing in terms of the weather is what it is in the school year. You're going to see the school year want to be ended closer to the beginning of May before they want to go stretching it into the middle of June. So it's just kind of what it is. I will touch on some things throughout the show that maybe we could help a little bit, but that's just kind of the hand we're dealt here in Ohio with the spring weather.
You have to be flexible, I guess. That's what it boils down to, and just about, do the best you can.
And a key point you'll hear me say, Bruce, throughout the show, it's a factor from the standpoint of you better be able to handle it or you can't be successful. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a baseball, softball, track program, and you can't handle the cold and you can't handle getting your practices in and some of the games or whatever, it can certainly impact your year. So yeah, the toughness and your ability to just accept it and play through it is a big factor.
It really, particularly in the baseball situation with the pitching rotation and everything, does it sometimes play to your benefit? I mean, is that fair to say that?
It can, because I'll tell you what happens in our area. The VA is a great facility that allows you a situation to play where, let's face it, a lot of times you wouldn't. So a lot of times if you're able to get a game in, it can certainly help keep you on schedule. Well, if you stay on schedule, sometimes it can keep your pitching staff in rotation. Mm-hmm. A lot of times what happens is if you get canceled, well, those games by league rule get moved to the next night.
Yeah.
Well, before you know it, if you get enough rain, you could be playing that dreaded three nights in a row, sometimes four nights in a row if it really gets bad. And that's when you can really get into some unique situations with your pitching. You'll see a lot of 3-1 games around the league on that first night. And then by night three, you might see a 10-8 game where the pitching is, where softball just simply doesn't deal with that. And that'll be something that maybe we get into later on as well, because, you know, last week we had that topic and it's certainly been stirred up a little bit more this week. So,
okay, we'll look forward to discussion on that. Fans, if you'll stay with us and we start the show with an email question, and perhaps we'll have a voice to add to our lineup here of SVC Sports Talk Past in the studio to help us with our response. Coming in from the bullpen, Charlie. Well, we had an email, and I think this is the kind of thing that we need some expert advice. In addition to your thoughts, Shane, we're going to open the doors of the studio here and bring in a voice from the past, as I alluded to. Why don't you do the introductions?
Well, people have been with us throughout the last couple years. We know Jeremy Ward is no stranger to the show, and basically had an email here talking a little bit more on the softball side of things. And as people know, I've been a baseball coach for about the last 20 years, and that limits a lot of out of all the sports in the SVC and high school in general. The softball, because of that job, is the one sport that I do not get to watch a lot of. Well, there's some different rules that are in place and some different things there. So when I read this email, I kind of had some of my opinions, particularly on the first half of it. And I immediately thought of Jeremy, and I thought of our Have a Clue Blue that we used to, the segment we used to do there. So and then the second part of the email does touch a little bit more on baseball, softball, but I thought that would just be a great week to bring Jeremy back. So Jeremy, if you would come on in, you know the drill here, get comfortable, and welcome back.
Well, thank you. Excited to be back, Shane. Bruce, good to see you guys.
Yep, sure is. We're glad to have you. It's a little bit more exciting with you around.
It really is it now.
Yeah. Shane just he just goes on and he doesn't share the food either.
Yes. Bruce, we had that email there. Take a look at it, and I know it's a long one. Kind of break it down the way you see fit there, and we'll try to our best to be intelligent.
Well, it is rather a long one, and it's got a couple of subjects here with maybe a little punch. And the first subject, they're talking a little bit about rules and the interpretation of rules. And specifically, there are two things that we kind of deal with in this particular one. And an overriding subject matter is the interpretation of rules and how that takes place on the diamond at the time of the event, I think. The first one, and this was something, admittedly, I'm not very familiar with. And it specifically stated about the double base, and I'm gonna let Jeremy explain. I know done some research on this, but the email is citing a couple different situations, and maybe the writer has disagreed with some of the ways that those rules have been interpreted, and. Specifically, it states that, for instance, before I go into the email specifically, Jeremy, why don't you kind of pick up with the purpose, if you will, of the double base, the orange and white, and what you can kind of lay out for the purpose of that.
Okay. So, you know, softball uses a safety base. So you have your regular white base, just like every other base. And then attached to that in foul territory is an orange base. And basically, if you're familiar with the runner's lane for the batter or runner from home to first, there's a 3-foot lane that they're supposed to run in. And in softball, they just go ahead and attach the base over there so they can run straight down that lane and they never have to merge to share the base with the first baseman. So the point is, you know, in softball, there's a lot of bang-bang plays, a lot of bunting, and, you know, with the only being 60-foot bases, a lot of collisions at first base. So, you know, there's two strains of thought there, basically. One is, why do you have a safety rule when you could just teach your first baseman to stay out of the way and your runners to run where they're supposed to? I get that, but the speed of the game, and obviously I know of a lot of kids that have ended up with concussions because of collisions at first base. So, you know, that's the reason for the double first base is to protect the kids and to limit those collisions.
Okay. And again, the overriding thing is this writer lays into the email is they're talking about a rule should be an absolute. A judgment is just that, a judgment. And then we're feeling more and more that umpires, officials, and admins are confusing the two. So kind of if you can lay out what you understand the rules are about the use of the safety base vis-a-vis offense and defense.
So primarily, I have to go back and look through and look at some ASA rules and some Federation rules and try to get some clarification. Basically, the safety base is for you know, the situation that I ran through. It's really for the runner, the batter slash runner running to first base from home. So basically a ball hit in play, the runner should use the orange base, the first baseman should use the white base.
Okay.
There are two exceptions to that. Ah. And this is where the judgment comes in. So even though it's a rule, there is the umpire's judgment. So it kind of makes this convoluted. So I certainly can feel for Coach here what he's talking about, because you're going to get different interpretations. But if, say, it's a drop third strike, the catcher's in foul territory on the dugout side, at that point, the first baseman can slide over to the outside base, the orange base, and the runner can run to the white base, again, for the intended purpose not to run into each other. The other part that's kind of sticky, and I've run into this before, you know, in games that I've watched and been a part of, is that if you have an errant throw and it pulls the first baseman off the bag, onto the orange base, is it still an out? Or if the runner
that was actually going to be my first question, not to interrupt real quick, but just to give you kind of an honest reaction, that's one of my first questions. So I'm kind of intrigued to know what the answer is.
Well, just think about even a play like a base hit to the right field. Well, the right fielder's playing tight. They make a throw. The first baseman's on the outside part of the bag because the hit was right down the line. Is that the same as the drop third strike? Well, so that interpretation is brought into play. And from what I understand is if the throw takes the first baseman off of the bag, at that point, they can use the orange. The runner can use the white. The runner's still out if the throw beats them. But that's where the umpire's judgment comes in. So you're going to have different interpretations. I found a whole page of it was an ASA site, but where there's a whole page devoted to those situations. So, and you didn't get anybody in that forum agreeing on the interpretations. And you had some longtime umpires on there and some coaches and obviously some back and forth. So this is definitely, I don't think it's as black and white as this is a rule and there's no judgment. There is a stipulation that brings the umpire's judgment into play here, which, yeah, for a coach, that certainly can make your blood boil.
And that's kind of what this writer is talking about. I mean, he's trying to say that a rule should be an absolute and a judgment is that and never the two shall meet. But what it seems as if you're saying, Jeremy, that there's judgment involved in this still.
There certainly is. And there are exceptions. And that's the way, you know, that's the way the rule is specified. In this case, is there are certain exceptions. So it isn't just the rule is the rule in black and white.
Do you feel like that's a little bit unfair to an umpire? Like you said, the first thing I notice when I sit down to watch a high school softball game, especially with two really good teams playing, and again, that is not often because of my baseball job, but again, when I get a chance to watch two SVC teams play, the speed of the softball game is unreal. To me, especially if you get some kids bunting and some good speed and so forth, that almost sounds a little unfair. I can't... People are probably out there thinking, is he really defending umpires? But you know, that seems a little bit unfair to me. Is that a fair point?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And if you ask my opinion on the safety base, I would say use one bag. I mean, you don't have to have exceptions. And I understand the safety aspect and I don't,
sure.
You know, I don't want to minimize that in any way, shape or form, but I do think you just get, you know, It is difficult to teach kids the game, and you talk about the speed. Sometimes, you know, at the younger levels, the kids get faster than you're ready for them to, you know, when those situations come up.
Well, in the perfect world, you get kids to throw a strike and hit your first baseman in the chest, but that's not the way it always
exactly.
goes. I
mean, exactly. No question about it. So, and these are instances. It's funny because in a junior high game already this year, we had a runner called out because she ran inside the baseline on a play from the catcher. Well, the the other coaches weren't quite sure of the rule, and the umpire was dead on. Now, did he have to call it in a junior high game? Probably not. Probably nobody would have recognized it. But it was a great learning point for those coaches to teach their kids and for me to teach my kids, you know, this is why there's two white lines and this is why there's a double base. You know, you stay in the runner's lane. So, you know, there are so many things to coach and teach, but, you know, I guess that's why these discussions are good. It's the best way to learn things.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, Bruce, that if I'm not mistaken, that email had a second part there. What was all involved in that?
Well, this one kind of be a hot topic, too. This one has to do with the continuation or the ending of a game, depending on where you are in the game. I don't want to give away the details of this because I'm trying to keep the anonymity of the writer, perhaps. And I'm going to let you, as a baseball coach, and Jeremy, from his softball background, kind of discuss exactly where we are in this whole situation, if you will.
Well, basically, Jeremy, we're talking about weather there in the opening, and this is one place weather can really get involved. I know one track meet the other night was cut short with X amount of events not being finished, and they were wondering, should there be a champion crown? Should there be a medalist? Well, the baseball softball version of that, obviously, is when you get to that magical fifth inning being completed, and all of a sudden you have a win. Some people might have an opinion on, is it truly a win? But at the end of the day, by rule, win is a win. I guess what I would ask you first, Jeremy, is do you agree with the rule as a coach, as a fan? Is it too much to ask for high school, no matter what the case, to have the full seven innings unless there's a run rule involved? Are you okay with the weather-shortened game of five innings?
I'm really not okay with any game shortened without the agreement of both coaches, especially when you're talking about seven inning games. The major league, they're talking about, you know, 162 game schedule. You're talking about little days in between to make games up or to finish suspended games. I think it's completely different in the high school setting. And I don't know why you wouldn't complete a game, especially if it's a conference game.
Well, I agree. I mean, it's one of those things where you're truly not getting the full battle of team versus team. You know, I've used the analogy on the golf course before. If if I go out and I play Jordan Spieth, 99 out of 100 times, obviously, he's going to destroy me. But what if that one time, if all I'm doing is playing him in one hole instead of 18 holes, and maybe that was the 12th hole today at the Masters?
Yeah. And,
you know,
10 cup.
Yeah, right. Maybe I'm able to knock it on in three and two putt and beat him. You know, it's one of those things where I just feel like the full seven innings is the better way to go. Now, I understand with the weather. I understand the rules there. But I guess the discussion is, are we okay with the rule? And I guess I would agree with Jeremy there. I just think anytime you shorten something, it just doesn't make for the best situation. But at the end of the day, it's there. Teams know it going in. And I'll be the first to say, Bruce, it certainly can impact the way you manage a game as a coach. You know, you get to the third inning. I can promise you, I've never had my phone out in 15 years of coaching during a baseball game. But there's times with the weather in the area and things like that, you're checking radar and you're checking, okay, is this game got the chance of ending here in a half hour, or is it going to go the full 70? So I'll tell you, it's something that is certainly taxing on coaches and players.
The writer of this email, though, is, I guess, saying that in certain situations, you know, they do continue the game, even though it may be already an official game. It's just that they decide to continue it.
Now, I don't know if I've ever had that involved, Jeremy, unless it was a tied situation after that particular time. Now, if you stop the game after four innings and you're going to finish it later, now you are going to go ahead and play the full seven at that point. But yeah, to my knowledge, in terms of being a part of it, if the game is tied, then by all means, they're going to pick it up. I know last year we had a situation where we got locked up in an instant classic with Adina out in Frankfurt. We had some umpire mix up. We didn't get started till late. We were tied at the end of, I think it was 10 innings. So in the next night, we got back on a bus and went on back out to Frankfurt and played because, again, it was a tied situation. So, again, Jeremy, unless I'm missing something there, I don't know that I've ever been a part of anything unless it was a tied situation beyond that fifth inning.
Well, and I think if I'm familiar with the situation, it's like, why, you know, I think the email was asking, why is it done both ways?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, it's very clear the examples of completed games that, you know, on the OHSAA site, as far as, you know, basically, unless, you know, the visiting team scores runs to take the lead or to tie the game, if it's five complete and you start an inning and don't finish it, that's the only way there'd be a suspended game after five innings would be a tie, or if, you know, the visiting team took the lead and then the home team wasn't able to bat. And I know a lot of softball people would confuse that situation with like with travel ball, where there's time limits, and, you know, if you don't finish an inning, it goes back to the last completed inning, and it's not the exact same. That's not the way that it's written out in the high school rule book. And that was a highlighted point of emphasis in the softball coach's manual this year. I know. I don't know about the baseball coaches. I didn't check that out, but you know, it's very, very, very well spelled out in the softball coaches.
But certainly, you know, in a league like ours, where the longest trip is inside an hour, I agree with what Jeremy said in the opening of responding to this second part of this email of, you know, why in the world, especially when this happens, you know, in our league, could we not fix it? But obviously, this type of rule sometimes goes up and beyond us.
The writer talks, obviously, about these two points, but the overriding flavor of this email, or essence of the email, is it seems that in some situations, whether it's a call about the orange and white base, the safety base, or about the weather and ending the game and so on and so forth, or continuing the game, it seems that he is saying, you know, I've seen the same situations be called two different ways in many different instances. And is that something that I'm just going? Is that something that legitimately happens? Does that make sense, Jeremy? Mm-hmm. What would you say to that? I mean, you see the same situation happen one place, and the outcome is this. You see the same situation happen someplace else, the outcome is different. Is that just baseball / softball?
Now, that's called human beings, I think.
Ah, okay.
I think that's where it comes into. I think sometimes when you're not dealing with state championships or league championships, you get into – and I think this is all sports. But I think sometimes you may have umpires that would just rather not – they would rather leave it up to the coaches. So in a situation like that, they know the teams are, you know, 10 minutes away. They hand them the card and say, if you guys play again, go ahead and finish this game. Well, that may not be the rule, but mm-hmm. the umpires are leaving that up to the coaches because they're the ones that ultimately are in charge, whereas you have other umpires who are going to be, you know, pardon the pun, but we would call them Ronnie Rulebook. They're going to be black and white, letter to the law. And I think sometimes coaches assume that as being egotistical when the umpire is not willing to have a conversation. They see it in black and white. I guess it depends on which side of that you're on. Situations happen, and sometimes you're on the short end of the stick, and it's not quite as nice as it is from the other side.
Well, I've certainly been on both sides of it, and I guess the thing you would want, I think all coaches in the long term would agree that you'd want the consistency, just so you know. I know we were stuck in a situation Wednesday night when the rain moved in, and you know, again, I've been on both sides of that exact situation, and what you're going to do as a coach is you're going to go to bat and you're going to try to utilize the rule to protect your kids and to put your kids in the best spot to be successful. Again, I think the consistency of the rule in terms of knowing what the rule is, that way everybody knows exactly what they're playing with, is probably the best thing. So I agree, Jeremy, when as you put it, human beings get involved sometimes, that can certainly put people in a pickle.
Well, I hope we've kind of done that email justice. Obviously, the writer did a good job of thinking it through, because it was packed with lots of good things to think about. And Shane, while we have Jeremy here, I want to take a look at another email that's been asking for help, but also asking you to give more of a coach's opinion in terms of baseball. That's up next.
This town ain't big, this town ain't small, it's a little of both, they say. Our ball club may be minor league, but at least it's Triple A. We sit below the Marlboro Man, above the Rockville Wall. We do the wave all by ourselves. Hey, Ump, a blind man could have made that call.
Well, we've got another great email, and we appreciate you providing this good fodder for us to discuss for this show, and we'd love to hear from you. We'll talk a little bit more about how you can become involved here in a little bit. This email, Shane, it specifically asks you. It says, Shane, I've been fascinated by pitch count discussions for a long time now, and I know you said in softball you didn't really know, nor do I, but in baseball, I want to know if you are big on an exact number, or is pitcher to pitcher basis what you should go on? And they say thanks, and we want to invite Jeremy. You kick in here wherever you'd like to, Jeremy.
Well, I think the biggest thing I see here, Jeremy and Bruce, is the fact that I appreciate the email, because this was a little bit of a longer email as well, and I just picked out the question part. This guy, I got the impression, had done a lot of little league work with kids coming up through, and maybe touched a little bit the junior high level, but was curious at the high school level. And I'm not a big exact number guy. Somewhere way back when at the high school, even in the Major League Baseball, it seems like that 100 pitch mark is like the all, be it number of, oh my goodness, 100 pitches. I've never tried to get involved in an exact number. I've really tried to have a feel. You get to know your kids, you get to know their training, you get to know with what situations they've been in. But I'll say this before I really get into my strategies. There's a lot of pressure on coaches to take care of the arm, for lack of a better term. The parents are looking at you, the players themselves, other coaches will have their count. Even nowadays, media, you'll see, and a lot of times in media, the media will report so-and-so, they needed 125 pitches to throw tonight's complete game or whatever it is. So it's tough to do. And I guess I look more at it in terms of stressful pitches. What are the big innings? Is my guy cruising along, staying in that 12 to 16 range per inning, or is it one of those where it seems like every inning they're throwing out of the stretch and they're throwing 25 to 30 pitches under a lot of stress? And that can add up a lot quicker. So a lot of times someone doing that at 70, 75 pitches can be a lot worse off than someone who has thrown 100, 110. You look at, if my math is correct here, at 15 pitch inning, basically in a high school game, you're looking at 105 pitch complete game. You ask a lot of people, they'd think that's a lot of innings.
Shane, I'll just jump in and ask you, so let's say, Monday night you play at home, and, how much time does your pitcher have to get ready before a start on a home game?
Well, technically, and again, everybody's a little bit different here. I'll be honest, Jeremy, when they're younger, I'm far more involved in that. And as they get older, I kind of leave them alone. But yeah, they're out there probably, you know, they would have up to an hour and 45 minutes if they needed to go through any stretching, running routine, whatever they wanted to do.
And then what about on a road game? So let's say on a Thursday night, you guys came to Vinton County for a 5 o'clock start. How much time would your pitcher have to warm up?
You would certainly cut that in half at least. Probably you'd probably be cutting it all the way down to what, 35 minutes probably.
Right. Plus a bus ride, plus maybe five games in the last 7 days. Is that
sure.
fair?
Sure.
So what I guess what to me gets lost in the pitch counts is all the outside situations that come into play in high school, travel, number of games, the fact that he's your shortstop or your catcher the days he's not pitching, like you said, stressful innings. I just think the number of the pitch counts just, I mean, it's a guideline, I suppose, but man, it's different for every single kid.
Well, and weather seems to play a factor too. People are like, oh, it's awfully cold out there. You know, I mean, and again, it is. But I mean, I think again, you're dealing with situations, as Jeremy just said. If someone's going to throw 120 pitches on a Monday night, but you know they DH when they're not pitching, and they're not going to pitch again until Friday or perhaps the following Monday. Is that extra 20 pitches hurting the arm? Again, that's hard to say. A lot of times you have to know each individual kid. I know we've had some workhorses in our league that have fired up as many as 135, 140 pitches in a game before. Mm-hmm. Is that a lot? I guess, but why do we say that? We say it's a lot because, again, our mind's been trained. You know, you'll sit down and watch the Reds on TV or whatever, even in a major league game. If they get to that 100 pitch mark, well, you know, so-and-so's coming off of this injury or this early in the year they want to do this. Yeah, it's just it's a really interesting debate. I love to work that relationship with kids. You know, I go back to last year. I had a really big-time workhorse in our league, Mason McCloy. I'll use that as an example. And, you know, I love the opportunity by the time a kid gets into their third and fourth year with me, I no longer have to sit there and go through a lot of this debate. A lot of times I just pass them on the way in the dugout, you know, before BP. Hey, Mason, how's it feel tonight? I'm a little sore, coach. I'll probably give you an inning. Okay. You know, hey, I have seven in me. I remember Mason coming to me one time last year. Coach, I think I can give you four innings tonight. I just don't think I've got the full game. I up to you, coach, if you want me to start it, end it, whatever, I'll be ready to go. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where that type of communication becomes really good because at the end of the day, the athlete probably knows better than anybody. But at the same time, Jeremy, I know you've probably gone through some situations where sometimes the kid's arm hurts a lot more when they can't throw it over the plate. But if they retired,
oh yeah,
you know, if they're working on a one hit shutout through three innings, they feel really good. So, you know, you have to deal with that a lot of times with some of your younger athletes in terms of maturity issues. So, you know, Jeremy, did you ever get wrapped up in the number itself, or did you try to really trust your instincts and your knowledge of your particular pitcher?
Well, I think the knowledge of the pitcher, I really tried to learn what it took for my kids to get loose, you know, and it's as I've helped out a little bit with the baseball team this year, you know, I've tried to talk to the pitchers, a lot of young pitchers, about what it takes to get them loose. And I gave them a guideline. You need to throw at least this many, you know, out of the stretch, out of the windup when you're warming up. And then from that point, find out if you need five more or 15 more. But yeah, you've got to learn your own body. You know, same way as a hitter's got to learn their own swing. You know, pitcher's got to learn what gets them ready. And also, they have to learn when they're running out of gas, when they need to be honest with you. You know, and that's easier said than done. But, you know, every scenario really requires some relationship status with player and coach. You know, even if it's I say one thing, but I'm going to give you a look, wink, wink, coach, and you know what I'm talking about.
Right, right. Well, and Bruce, this is even all the way up to the highest level of baseball. I know the other night after the Reds game, I turned it over and saw that where the Dodgers rookie was working on the no-hitter. Mm-hmm. And the pitch count was starting to get high, and he walked the one guy, and I think he was, he's into the 90s there, and the manager went out and got him. So, I mean, and there's been all sorts of opinions floating around there, even, again, the highest level. But, you know, fans, coaches, athletes, again, if you have comments on that, send them in to us. But you know, Jeremy, the one thing I definitely want to touch on while we have you here, there's been a lot of talk through social media, and then since then, it's been something brought up to me, and really I've heard both yay and nay. It's the softball pitch count idea. And, you know, even though it's quote unquote the natural movement, you know, scientifically they talk about how the movement doesn't hurt the arm as much. You know, again, I'm not smart enough to say, to be honest, but I know you follow softball a lot more. They certainly are out there working hard and using a lot of parts of their body to drive the ball, and they get tired. The question is, have we reached a time with our athletes where we need a softball innings limit? So I guess I would just, with you being more of a softball expert than me here for SVC Sports Talk, what are some of your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I'll have to say, in talking to some parents, I think some parents really are concerned about this. And, you know, some do a lot of research and they, you know, they think about, well, man, my daughter's throwing every day. She's the only pitcher on the team. She's been the only pitcher on the team since she was 12. She may throw between 150 and 180 pitches a game. And that's not just like every once in a while. That's like every night. Yeah. And at some point, it can be natural motion, but your body's going to break down a little bit. So I think, again, you're relying on the coach to make that decision, or the parents, you know, in that situation. You know, you don't want to overstep your bounds, but I think you have to have a mature conversation with coach and parent and athlete and make sure everybody's on the same page. Because if one of those three people think that somebody else is, you know, putting them in harm or in danger of injury, then, you know, that's a problem as well. So I don't know. I don't know that I'd be in favor of an innings limit. But, you know, I could also see, you know, like in baseball, it's 10 any 3 days, you know, in softball, you know, having that spread out that, you know, you can only throw so many innings in the course of a week, even if it just means you have to have at least 1 day off or 1 day off per 5 days, something like that.
Well, I think the most intriguing thing there, Bruce, is the fact that in softball, it would really, really impact like your league champion. Yeah. I mean, you know, all of a sudden now, instead of one kid pitching every night, let's say you went to something similar. And Jeremy, I don't know if it'd be a 10-inning rule in that. I assume it'd be something a little bit more wide open than that. But, you know, it would certainly impact the standings, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. No question about it.
It would make – it would really upset the apple cart if all of a sudden that came in.
No question.
Yeah, I agree.
Good email.
Good stuff. Shane, why don't we head to extra innings?
Well, Jeremy, while we have you here this week, do you have time to hang in here with us and do a little extra inning work with me?
Sure. No problem.
Okay, that'd be great. And what we'll do is in our extra innings segment this week, Bruce, we'll go ahead and stretch it out there a little bit. I'll go first with an answer and then let Jeremy come in second. But first, let me tell the listeners that this will be brought to them by Crown Hill Golf Club. That's located up U.S. Route 22 west in Williamsport, just minutes from Route 104. What you need to do, fans, give the course a call, 740-986-GOLF. That's 740-986-4653. Ask for Dave or Kevin. Tell them SVCSportsZone.com sent you. I know I've got my five-round membership set up. Incredible deal. Really looking forward after the season there as the weather turns nice in the summer, getting up there. Hopefully once every week or every other week and playing a really nice course. So, Bruce, with that in mind, then we'll double up here on extra innings. So if you're ready to go, let's go ahead and go with this week's version.
What has jumped out at you as a big surprise in the first few weeks of the spring season?
I think on the track side here a little bit, as we said last week, even with extra innings, anytime we see something that applies to track, we certainly want to make sure we're covering that as well. And I've been real impressed with some of the small schools competing. I understand that a lot of the big schools might be holding back in terms of certain athletes and certain events and maybe using some of that depth to get people involved. But I've been real, real impressed. I mentioned last week the Paint Valley boys edging out like a Zane Trace and a Hillsborough in terms of some bigger schools there. So that's been impressive. And then in softball, the competitiveness of a Southeastern And, you know, maybe Jeremy'd have a thought on that as well. But, you know, some of the parity throughout the league, you know, Zane Trace knocking off Paint Valley. So, you know, softball's still a little bit of a work in progress in terms of what exactly my expectations are. But those are just some of the things that jump out at me.
Yeah, I'd have to say, you know, again, obviously I'm not as in tune with everything as I have been in the past, but a big surprise for me softball-wise has been some of the lopsided scores, and not lopsided in the way that you expect. There's some games that I thought would be close that weren't, and I think Shane alluded to it last week, that it's a little more top half, bottom half, instead of it just being one or two teams or five teams at the top and then a distinguished difference at the bottom like it has been maybe in years past. In baseball, as far as big surprise, you know, I think I've been a little bit surprised at some teams, number two and three pitchers, how much success they've had, maybe flying under the radar. But we certainly know a little bit more about them now than we did before the season started.
On the other hand, what has taken place that does not surprise you at all?
Well, for me, I guess it just doesn't surprise me at all that SVC baseball offers you no nights off. It's just, as I said there in last week's opening show for the spring, that's just crazy good. You know, when you look at the Edina Southeastern game and then the Uniota Edina game, the Zane Trace Paint Valley game, and then, you know, Zane Trace's offense goes crazy. And then, you know, the other night, Paint Valley Southeastern, it's just, you know, you look, Huntington's off and running. The Piketon pitching's been good. Even Westfall scored 10 runs in a loss. So it's just a crazy good league, and it's just going to be the way it is all year. So nothing at all about SVC baseball surprised me to this point.
You know, I'd have to say, you know, pitching is king. You know, the in baseball or softball, the kids coming back that you expected to be shut down type performers, you know, have proven that. But if you can't get ahead and count, you can't throw strikes on a night after night basis, you're going to get your butt kicked. And there's been some of those going on. So I guess just kind of as expected, if you're not going to do what you need to do to get things done in the circle or on the mound, you're not going to have a lot of success.
Based on the first few weeks of the season, give the fans some athletes in line to have some breakout seasons.
Well, I mentioned the Paint Valley track team earlier. You know, a lot of that's with Ott and Burton and some of the throwing points that they might be able to accumulate. As I go back to the Diamond Arrow, I know some of the new faces at Uniota there in baseball, and the pop kid from Southeastern's been terrific. I'll tell you one, Jeremy, it really jumps out at me is Pierce Mowry. I mean, it's a kid that we've known from the basketball court so much. You take a Zane Trace team that already had like, you know, eight or nine Lettermen coming back, you throw an athlete like him into the mix, and boy, has that made a difference. I know on our team, Drake Stanforce really had a nice breakout year early on too, but yeah, I mean, the Mowry kid would be one that really jumps out at me right off the bat here.
Yeah, those are some of the names I would have mentioned. Obviously, I've seen Pop. I've seen Stanforth really have some good at-bats in the game we played against you guys. And, you know, then Costa Mowry in the headlines of the baseball games. And, you know, I think I knew Uniota baseball was going to be a little stronger as they came on last year. And just some of those young faces, you know, again, not really a surprise. On the softball side, there are some young players that, you know, you're just kind of waiting to see how they adjust. And I think the one that pops out is the Campbell girl from Uniota, who's really, really nice athlete. And, you know, I think she's already made quite an impact as a freshman.
Give the SVC fans a must watch in the upcoming week.
Well, you know, it'd be interesting to see maybe hear Jeremy's comment on this, the Paint Valley Uniota softball game. When you look at Newland and Blevins and you know, when we talk breakout stars too, a lot of times that what goes unnoticed, Jeremy, is how hard it is to catch those particular girls. So that's a good one too. But I would also take a look on the baseball side at the weather. You know, later in the week, you could get into some situations where there's a three, even four straight nights of league play, and the pitching, the hitting from early to late in the week could certainly be intriguing there. And then I also, if Bruce's forecast is correct of the better weather coming, see if the track times and distances improve a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point. Obviously, Nolan and Blevins is a must watch in softball. Kind of a flipped script. You know, you got some new faces at Unioto that you want to see how they adjust against a big time pitcher like Nolan. You know, they've had some success reaching base and, you know, wreaking havoc to this point, but, you know, how will they respond against the pitcher of her caliber? And, you know, some of the Paint Valley kids that are now settled in, had some more success, had a little more experience, like you say, solidified a little bit more at the key positions, allowing better athletes to play those spots, because when you're catching a talent like Michaela, that's, of course, a tall task. But, how those kids respond to the environment of that type of game as they move forward to, what they're expecting to be a deep tournament run in Division IV.
Well, that is our extra innings, and as always, brought to you by the Crown Hill Golf Club, located just up U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Give them a call. We want to remind you that you can be a part of the show, and we would like for you to be. You can contact us through Facebook, Shane's personal profile, also the SVC Sports Zone profile as well. You can catch him on Twitter. His email address is admin1@svcsportszone.com. And, of course, you can give us a call on the DBK Media Services phone line, 740-569-3254. That's 740-569-3254. And you can leave us a message there, and we'll be sure to include your comments. Let us know if you want to actually use your voice or whether you'd just like us to pass the message along. But get involved. We'd love to have you. Shane was telling me earlier about a question, a discussion that came up this past week. It had to do with all-time teams and how from other sports we always have one, doing one for baseball and so forth. School Hall of Fames, do spring athletes get a fair shake when it comes to these things? Shane, what do you think about that?
Well, and before I get into that, Bruce, as I always try to do a couple times each week, I need to give a shout out to C&K Athletic Equipment up in Circleville, 740-477-9828. Certainly appreciate all they do for our area and appreciate the support here on SVC Sports Talk. But yeah, I know I got real general on the agenda with this here, guys, but I guess the discussion had started about how, you remember in the past we've selected some all-time teams in SVC basketball or girls basketball or some different things, and we started talking about baseball and softball, and I thought that would be very difficult to do, I guess was my first response, because a lot of times you're going to get so many pitchers, so many catchers, so many shortstops and so forth, or are you trying to get things throughout every position and things like that? I think that's tough. Well, then the conversation went on, Jeremy, in terms of School Hall of Fames and do spring athletes get the fair shake? And I guess my answer to that is I don't know. I'd say it's probably a little different at schools, but I know you've been around baseball a long time and you've had a chance to kind of be a part of a lot of different schools, just in terms of all the people and relationships you've made. I guess I think that's a fair question in terms of I don't know if they do. And I think the reason I would say, and then I would love to get your feedback, I don't know if the people voting are real educated in the spring sport. Bruce and I just talked about it last week. It's not covered by the media nearly as much as the other ones. If I tell someone that someone had 200 career hits, I don't even know if they know what that means. If I tell them that so-and-so had 200 strikeouts, I don't know if they know what that means. Where if I tell someone 1,000 points in basketball, it's at least a number that they recognize, or 1,000 yards rushing in a season. And I think a lot of times the record keeping, if you go back, especially back beyond 15, 20 years, what I'm even finding is I try to do different things. Spring record keeping back into the 90s and 80s and 70s and so forth, just not quite as good as it is. So, Jeremy, I mean, just some of your thoughts there in terms of when you think of these all-time best athletes and we start talking about School Hall of Fames and some different ways that we would honor them in an all-time setting. Do you think a spring athlete would get that fair shake compared to someone who maybe did something in a bigger light, such as a football field or a basketball court?
Well, in my experiences, I don't think so. Not at all. I think there's a huge disadvantage to those spring athletes just because there's not, you know, the media coverage. There's not the, you know, there's just not the community support, so to speak. And I don't know why that is. Track meets start at 4:30 and baseball games start at 5 o'clock, and you cut the casual fan out of it. Maybe that's the case. It's certainly not a social event like a football game or a Friday night, Saturday night basketball game.
Yeah.
In my experiences with the Hall of Fames, is those spring sport athletes are not quite as respected, with the exception possibly of track, because there's times and there's distances, and nobody's mom kept the scorebook for that. Either they jumped it or they didn't. Either they ran that time or they didn't. So if somebody comes with a resume in track, you pretty much know that this is what it is, mm-hmm. and those numbers don't necessarily change. So I suppose you could argue possibly with track, not so much, but baseball, softball, certainly.
Alrighty, our final segment throughout the spring here is, of course, brought to you again by Crown Hill Golf Club, and we encourage you to check out their website on crownhillgolfclub.com, and anytime you visit them up there, please tell Kevin and or Dave that svcsportzone.com sent you. So let's go to our post-game segment now, and we're going to kind of just talk about what we talked about. What did you enjoy discussing the most today, Shane?
Well, Jeremy, I certainly enjoy having you back in the studio here and just some of the back and forth conversation. I guess I just really like the idea of educating myself a little bit more on the softball side of things and seeing some comparisons that come into the baseball game. But I'm really intrigued by this pitch count. And I think it's something that I would love to hear more about from an athlete's perspective. From a coach's perspective, I would even like to hear maybe from the parents' perspective, because, you know, I know a lot of times, let's face it, we turn subjective in a hurry if we're watching someone else throw 115 pitches compared to maybe if that's our son out there throwing 115 pitches who, you know, maybe they're good enough to start to flirt with the idea of doing some of the things at the next level. So, you know, Jeremy, just I guess pitch count would jump out at me, maybe something from the show that intrigued you.
Well, I always love the discussions, that stem from an email or from a question. That's really been for me the best part of the show. So just taking, a couple paragraphs from an email and being able to dive off in different topics. I always enjoy that, and it makes me think, and it made me, you know, go call somebody, and it made me look this up, and, you know, while you're looking up that, you find three other instances. But, and I'll agree with the pitch count. It's hard for me. I don't think anybody ever told me, hey, you've thrown too many pitches, you're done for the day. I knew that if my arm felt good that day, I was going to pitch, and then as soon as my arm felt good, I was going to pitch again, and that's just the way it was. And I don't know if that's just, you know, me not knowing any better at the time. Or if it had to do with preparations,
Well, Jeremy, certainly. Do you still think there's some truth to the hitters will kind of let you know how the pitcher's feeling? I mean, a lot of times, it's one of those things that if you're watching a kid and he continues to have good stuff and is locating well and is not, again, maybe mechanically repeating the delivery the way you want to see or whatever, but if the stuff continues to be good, can't you kind of still eyeball that and have the hitter tell you a little bit?
Certainly. I think the danger is for a high school coach, though, is the fact that you know what your plan B is or your plan F, whatever it might be, and you know your schedule for the rest of the week, and sometimes it is really hard for a coach only to step away and only to think about the best interests of the kid in the heat of the moment. And that's the only thing, you know, when it's one more, can you go one more? And your eyes say the kid needs to tell you yes. You know, is that you putting that kid in jeopardy? I don't know. I worry about that, personally, as a coach in that situation, because I knew that I wanted to hear what I wanted to hear in that situation.
Well, with all that being said, what kind of feedback are we looking for then from the fans? I'd just say that it sounds like the pitch count's going to be something that would be in play.
It is. Yeah. It is. And I do want to give earlier, I should have said, Bruce, when I was mentioning CNK Athletic Equipment, I want to mention CNKAthleticEquipment.com is also somewhere they can go. I know a lot of little league coaches and different things. They're really good to get people involved. But I'll even add something else in here, Bruce. I know we've cheated a little bit to the baseball softball side this week. Mm-hmm. Here's something I had down in my notes for track that I would love to get some feedback on. At some of these schools with the bigger enrollment, I think that they look to compete within to get as many people in the events as possible or whatnot. But as you get to some of the smaller schools, and they kind of come to the realization that they can't win this invite, or they're not going to be able to win or even finish in the top two or three of the league. A lot of times what I'll hear is your coaches will start to look and say, okay, where can I put this athlete into event to get he or she to the all league banquet? Hmm. Where can I, or what four athletes can I put into certain events to have the best chance to maybe go to the regional? And what happens is you can really put your program on the map by getting some of these kids out to the regional and to the state. A lot of times what I've found, that especially at the small school, is it only takes one or two athletes to really put your program on the statewide map. And, you know, Jeremy, I know down at Vinton County there's a lot of good athletes and so forth. Maybe that would be considered a little bit of a bigger school, so I don't know if that would apply. But wouldn't you agree, as you get down in our league, to say a Paint Valley, a Southeastern, maybe even an Edina, a lot of times you'll see four elite athletes join together on some of these relay teams, that it probably mm-hmm. goes back to why people don't want to show their hand throughout the year.
All right. No question about that. I think that's a great point. And I mean, regardless of the amount of events, if you really can focus on two or three events where you really want to be competitive, you know, it's just, it's a completely different mindset. But, you know, like I said, if you attribute that to enrollment, or even just the size of your team, the depth sure. of your team, you can only focus on so much. Wouldn't you rather be good at one or two things than just be mediocre to fill in all the spots?
And Bruce, I think what happens is coaches are looking at it as, okay, I could put these athletes here, here, and here, and maybe I could bump up a little bit, but they're almost looking at it as, while instead of moving up to third place as a team, I would rather finish fifth or sixth in the league if it meant getting these four kids a chance to win this event, go to the all-league banquet, and maybe a chance to go to the regional or even the state. Now, all of a sudden, I've benefited more kids, and I've benefited putting our program on that map in terms of, hey, how'd your team do this year? Hey, we had the relay team still going in the state.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, right. that certainly, I get that, you know, and that's something I didn't always get, you know, say 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, where as I've become more friends with some track coaches and I followed a little bit more with the website, those are some of the things in the website that's educated me. So I would love to hear, you know, the difference between a bigger enrollment, or as Jeremy said, just bigger, you know, rosters from a Uniota, even people outside the area, Vinton County, Zane Trace, schools like that, compared to a lot of these schools that might just be trying to take 10, 15, 20 kids, but really kind of doing it with three or four elite athletes. I just think that would be some intriguing discussion.
And that'd be some good feedback, though, if anybody could kind of chime in on that. We'd like to hear from you. Again, Facebook, Twitter, email, the phone number 740-569-3254. We'd love to hear from you. So that's going to put this show in the books. And until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all the other sponsors on the website, for, of course, Shane Combs and all the people here at DBK Media Services, and for Jeremy, we'd like to thank you for being here. We appreciate it, and we'll hopefully have you again someday when you can work it into your busy schedule. All that said, we're reminding you that we are here at SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk.
SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.